Near-Death Experience Podcast, an ongoing exploration of spiritually transformative experiences, including NDEs and other phenomena, in order to elucidate the ineffable and better understand our spirituality. All episodes are available at ndepodcast.org. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and guests are not necessarily those of NDE Podcast, the NDERF, any sponsors, or for that matter, anyone else. In the end, the only opinion that really matters is yours.
Welcome to Near-Death Experience Podcast, the official source of audio accounts for the Near-Death Experience Research Foundation. I'm Chaz Hathaway, author of Life in the Spirit World, What Near-Death Experiences May Teach About Life on the Other Side. Today we're going to share an experience from NDERF.org by Jennifer, and while I'm not clear on what led up to her near-death experience, her account dives right into it. So I think that's great. So let's just dive into it. Jennifer says, I felt that I had returned home, and I thought, thank you, God, I'm back. I knew I was right. I just knew I was from heaven. I was then communicating with the most beautiful spiritual being, and I felt that I was in the presence of the Spirit. It only allowed me to see it from the right-hand side and from over my right shoulder. I believe it to be the Spirit of Christ that I met and who talked with me. It was too perfect to be any other. He then said to me, I am sorry, but you must return. I was immediately angered by this, and I was not willing to agree. I said, no, you do not understand how much pain is down there and how hard it is to live there. No way am I going back there. Never. No way. The warmth of the light is the best feeling ever that any child or adult could ever experience. No drug or fix on this earth, such as extreme activities or anything else that you can imagine, will ever feel that good. When you feel it around you, it is perfect. This is what I was experiencing. I was also able to fly, and I flew up into the heavens. I do not remember just how I knew, but I just knew that this was me. I could still see and think that this is me. Yet I was shown my body below, in the plane in which I knew there was a line between here and there. I could see my limp and lifeless body thrown over the driver of the car. I was asked, how about now? Do you see now that you must go back? I said, no. You know I'm not happy down there. And you know this is my prayer, my one dream answered. I have been begging to come back here, home, ever since I left to go down there. I can't stand it, and I'm not going back. Then the voice says to me, Jennifer, you must go back and help. And I said, no. Then the voice said that his nose is cut off his face. You will need to go back and help him. He is bleeding to death. I said, no, let someone else do it. He will be fine without my help. I do not want to go back down there. Then the voice said, I will tell you what to do. You take off his shirt after you pick up his nose from off the floor of the car. It will be next to your feet. Place his nose on his face and press it down to stop the bleeding. It's just blood, so don't be afraid. I'm with you always. I knew I was never alone. From as far back as a child, I could remember. So then the voice said, Jennifer, you will begin to walk up the right side of the road, and a car will come. Tell the man to take you to the nearest hospital. Keep the man calm. Go to the ECM hospital where you were born. You know the way, and everything will be all right. You must do this. Do you understand? And I said, no. No, I will not go back there. No, no. Then the voice says, you must think about your mother. Think what your death would do to her, Jennifer. No, I said, I don't care. I know you love her and she will be fine. There's no way I'm going back. Then I said, ah, darn, okay, I will reluctantly agree. But dang it, it's so unfair. But you know me, and I will go for you. If you really must send me back, I will go for you. Yes, okay, I will do what you have instructed me to do because I love you. And I will be with you again someday. However, I won't forget this. Swoosh, and I'm back in my body. I raised myself up and to look around, seeing how perfect my body still was. I checked myself out and said, okay, I like it. Nothing damaged here. Now on with my work. Oh yeah, I remember what you last said before I was sucked back into my body. You said I have to come back here because I still had work to do down here. I'm not finished yet. Okay, now where is this poor guy's nose? Oh yeah, first I've got to get him out of that shirt. And it's okay, my friend was going to lift and carry you up the road. I needed your shirt to hold your face. Do not panic. I know what I'm doing. Trust me. I have you, and everything is under control. Trust me. I know God and Jesus. And we've got you a ride. He's pulling up now. Just remain calm and still while I get this poor man who looks afraid to take us to the ECM hospital. We are only 10 minutes away. I promise you everything will be okay. I said to the man giving us a ride, look, mister, please, just keep your eyes on the road, at least until we get to the hospital. And he said, lady, he's bleeding. He's dying in my car. He was crying. The man driving the car that stopped to help us is afraid and clearly freaking out completely. So I will just keep talking to the both of them, keeping them assured and calm, telling them that all will be well if we follow my instructions. I said, please, I know what I'm doing. Which now I'm sure it did seem strange coming from a clearly calm and controlled 11-year-old female who had no CPR training or experience in these matters. Yet I did, if you know what I mean. Just another day in paradise, right? The emergency room doctor successfully attached the nose perfectly into place, then grafted skin from his hip. And this guy heals up perfectly, barely a scratch left to notice. So then the emergency room doctor asked my mother, where did your mother receive her awesome CPR training? And how did she know exactly what to do at her young age? My mother just shook her head and said, she has no experience of any kind. The doctor then said, well, I placed 2 stitches in the top of her head. She may have a tiny cut, but nothing to fear. So just watch her for the next 24 hours. Keep her awake tonight. Watch her in case she has concussion. He then said, I'm a medical doctor, and I cannot explain what kind of miracle I just witnessed in this emergency room today, especially the things that came out of your little girl's mouth and the way she saved this guy's life and calmed everyone around here. It's amazing. Just amazing. I went home and said to God, and Jesus too, I was sorry for being so selfish, and please forgive me. I will do better while I'm down here, because I know you guys are always with me, and you've always been with me, and I will never die or be alone here or there. I was thankful for the experience, yet I still felt homesick and lonely, as I had always been before the car wreck, which had happened for no reason on a clear, beautiful, sunny day. With no one else in sight for miles, we just drove across the road and into a telephone pole. Then at the age of about 30, I met my dad's brother in a local pharmacy where I was working at the time, after he had just been pronounced dead at where else but ECM Hospital, the same hospital where I was born and where I took the guy from the car wreck after my near-death experience. My uncle was excited and seemed eager to share his story with the pharmacist. I was then employed under his name. It was Jason. I had no contract with this uncle until I met him in the pharmacy that day. I was working my way through college, and I was also writing all of the term papers that I was allowed on ESP and NDE. My life has been so affected by both of these special gifts, so I walked over and asked Jason, "Can you tell me about your near-death experience for a paper I'm working on for college?" He agreed to do that. He said that he woke up in a morgue 15 minutes after being pronounced dead, and that he had come back after being allowed to from the other side, from heaven, to apologize to his family for not being a better person to them. But he said he loved it there. He said he couldn't wait to go back. He remembered how he could fly and how all of his dreams came true there. He said that it was awesome. And I said, "Yeah, I know." He said that he planned to go back in about 3 months. In 3 months' time, he died again, this time staying that way. Then a second customer, a longtime friend and customer of the pharmacy, comes into the store one day with pretty much the exact same story. So I asked him to share his experience, and he too had returned to make it up to his wife and son because he knew he was not very nice to them. But while he was dead, he said that he flew across his dream farmland, his dream farm and land. Both of these men had spoken of beautiful green grass over there and the awesome feelings that were so good that no human could ever describe them. This man's name was Jack. And my dad, funny enough, also had another brother whose first name was Jack. Now, Jack told me that he loved heaven and that he also loved flying and that he wanted to return as soon as possible. And in about 3 months, he would go. So he died 3 months later and stayed on the other side. I bet he's enjoying his flying and his perfect farmland. When I was in college in my late 30s, I hired a tutor to help me with my algebra. We became close friends very quickly. We spent a great deal of time together, yet we were never sexually involved, but we were as close as two people could get. I called it a spiritual love or friendship. I vowed never to allow our time as friends to become anything else, and Joe agreed. Joe was the twin brother of one of my best girlfriends, from the second grade. Her name is Jackie. One day I told Joe all about my near-death experience. Joe was so surprised and thrilled, and for the first time ever, I found someone who really wanted to know every detail, and he made me promise that it was all true. He loved it, and he said that he would die first, just like his dad had, and one of his brothers before him had. I said, "No way. I will die first, Joe, because I'm sick of having surgery now, and you're young and healthy." I said, "Anyway, my own mom used to say that she would live to see the holy war of the biblical revelation begin or take place. And my mom said that I will more than likely die at age 41, and she would laugh about it. So I told Joe that I will be the one who dies first at 41 years of age." And he said, laughing, "I would just like to see your face if all of this comes true, and you, Jennifer, can make flower arrangements with blue for my funeral." So I agreed. And I said, "Joe, if you die at 41, send me the publisher's clearinghouse van with a check for $10 million because of all the medical bills I have. I sure could use it," laughing. I thought no more of it until last June 2007, when Joe sat down at the age of 41 and died without any forewarning except what we had discussed over 16 years ago. And every possible practical joke Joe could have possibly played on me, he did after his death, until I remembered our agreement. Also, my dad and his sisters went into the hospital 3 years ago, and of course, it was the same ECM hospital where I was born. They both had multiple near-death experiences, and as a matter of fact, my aunt, my dad's sister, told me that when she was going back over, there were all of her people there, just waiting for her. She told me things she had no way of possibly knowing about my personal life at that time. At her older age, and having not been in contact with me for many, many years, and she had not seen my dad in a couple of years either. However, she told me of her own near-death experience and did not need to ask her how she saw my home from over there, and it was all ready and beautiful. She also told me the exact proper order of her and her husband's death, and of my dad's and my mom's and my brother's deaths. Yes, they all occurred in the proper order that she received them, or that she revealed them to me from her hospital bed at ECM Hospital. So, to make a long story short, if there are only 774 a day in the U.S., good, as I do not have time for much more of this stuff. It's like I've been a magnet for NDEs. And when people are dying of cancer or whatever, and they are uncomfortable about preparing to leave this physical world, they seem to be much happier whenever I visit their hospital room, or wherever it is that the person may be. Their family always tells me this. Once I even received a $50 check from a man friend who died of cancer when I needed another surgery. So after his funeral, which I attended, I received the check and a letter from Donald telling me to use the money to get well, so that I could stay and help others by just staying the way I am, honest and down to earth. Well, by now, yes, I am down to earth and very grounded, and I will be for a long time. It's just a gut feeling, Jenny. And that is the end of Jennifer's account. And what a beautiful account. Not only does she have her own near-death experience, but she begins to unintentionally gather these near-death experiences of many other people. And she, as she says, she seems to be a magnet for near-death experiences. I have found personally that when you begin to study these things and take interest in them and are not afraid to bring up the fact that you're interested in them, they just come up and people start opening up. My experience is that people want to share their experiences, but they're nervous too. They think people are going to think they're crazy. They may think that they're trying to be presumptuous, or they're worried sometimes about becoming some kind of guru that people want to follow, and they don't want that. They don't want that at all. They just feel this love for God, this love for the other side, this desire to fulfill their life's purpose, whatever it may be, and they feel a great love and lifting when they're able to share their experience in sincerity and in as much fullness as they feel comfortable doing. That's my experience. And the fact that this kind of experience is common to all of us who will die, or it's going to be common to all of us who are going to die someday, means that we have that in common to look forward to. We don't have to feel like we need to stand out as some kind of guru, because this is something that all of us are going to experience. And it's going to be unique to each of us as well, because everybody's experience is unique. And yet, the common elements, including the love, the opportunity to have their dreams come true, flying, you know, a lot of these things that make the experiences so enjoyable are common opportunities to all. Okay, let's touch on just a few things. I find it interesting, and you'll have noticed by now, if you've been listening for a long time, how often people have an argument with the Lord, okay, with God, or the Spirit, whoever it is, that they are feeling this perfect and endless love from, and they are being told they have to go back, and they argue. They argue hardcore a lot of times. Sometimes they even throw temper tantrums, which sounds so funny because as an adult, I wouldn't do that for just about anything. I can't think of anything that I'd throw a temper tantrum for. I might have a internal mental temper tantrum. In fact, I have those fairly commonly, but I don't have them in front of people. But I think it's only fair to point out that on the other side, all thoughts, all feelings are just open. So feeling a temper tantrum inside, even if it's not the kind of thing that you would voice intentionally on earth, if you're feeling it inside, perhaps you will have that temper tantrum there because the thoughts and feelings just come out. And because they just come out, it comes out as a temper tantrum. Anyway, this was not an example of a temper tantrum, but certainly it was an argument. I mean, here Jenny is trying to say, I don't want to go back. I want to stay right here. But this Spirit of Christ, as she decides to consider it, the Spirit of Christ is saying, look, you're going to go back, and I need you to listen. You need to go and find this man's nose, and you need to, you know, attach it to his face, wrap his shirt around his face to hold it on, you know, and just gives the step-by-step instructions of what needs to happen. Okay, now, even though she didn't say what her accident was at the beginning, she does talk about it later. So clearly she's walking down the road, and or maybe she's riding in the car. It's kind of unclear, but maybe she's riding in the car with the man. Yeah, in fact, that seems to be more likely. But she doesn't seem to know who this guy is. So I don't know, maybe she's hit by the car. Anyway, she's involved in the accident, and the car slams into a telephone pole, as she later explains, and she gets a couple of stitches. It is as much as she needs, maybe a little bruising, but this man is pretty torn up. So she is instructed exactly what to do. She does it, and the car coming that she's able to flag down and to take to the hospital, he's freaking out. It sounds like the man who's bleeding to death is freaking out a little bit, and she is just there as an 11-year-old girl keeping everybody calm, or at least making the attempt, and saying, it's all right. I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. You guys just be calm. And they're like, whoa, you know. And they get to the hospital, and, you know, they take care of everything, get everybody patched up and so forth. And the doctor's like, how on earth did she know exactly what to do? What kind of CPR training did she get? What kind of medical training has she had? And her mom's like, nothing, nothing whatsoever, basically. And he's like, well, I don't know what just happened, but that I've never seen a miracle like this before. And anyway, so very interesting. Well, that near-death experience, whether it's her first spiritually transformative experience, we can't possibly know. She may not even have a memory if she had an earlier one. But regardless, she has this near-death experience, and it sets in motion a lifetime of spiritually transformative accounts that come to her from other people, and she becomes a magnet to them. I think spiritually transformed people magnetize spiritually transformative experiences. I think that's a thing. I don't know why. I don't know how that works exactly, but it seems to be the case. Since studying these things myself, without even mentioning my study of these things, people have started coming out of the woodworks with these experiences. And now that I'm doing this, and I mention to people that I have a podcast where I share near-death experiences, they're like, I got something to tell you, you know. And, you know, one man sat down with me and talked about his experience sitting down and speaking with God. This is a man who has not you won't find him in the near-death experience literature, because he's just not gone that route. He's bedridden. He's, you know, suffered through a good part of his life not being able to get around, and yet he shared this very personal and deep, beautiful, spiritually transformative experience, near-death experience, really. And I'm thinking, wow, what a gift to be able to hear this from people. And I can tell you, if you start asking around and talking to people about these things, you'll find they're more common than you may think. So you guys, let me just say, there is life after this life. And not only is there continuance of life, but it is far better, more beautiful, and more loving and joyful than we can possibly imagine. We're here for a reason, and it's a very important reason. So we need to stick it out while we're here. We need to work hard to try to do what our heart pulls us to do, what the Spirit of God, or the you know, as we pray and we meditate and we feel inclined to do certain things with our lives, let's do those things and make this life everything that we came to do with it. Let it be everything that we came to be. Because we're here for a reason. And when we return, it's going to be an incredibly joyful reunion. If you have loved ones, lost family, friends, pets, animals, I promise you, they're all there waiting to meet you again. And the reunion that you have there will be more joyful than any reunion that you could have had here in this life. You know, there's this idea of, oh, if I only had one more day to be able to tell them how I felt or tell them how sorry I am or whatever. Don't worry. You will have that opportunity. And I can bet that if it's a regretful, you know, I'm so sorry for what I've done, you're going to come face to face with them, and their first words to you will be, it's okay. I love you. Thank you for your feelings. Thank you for being willing to have the desire to be better, because that made it all worth it. That's what they're going to tell you in some degree or another. Our lives, our existence, our very being is about love. And sometimes those lessons come at a difficult cost. But if they come, that's what's important. So, if you would like to contact the podcast, email me, chaz@ndepodcast.org. You can also email John at john@ndepodcast.org. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can either go to our Patreon page, or you can purchase my book, Life in the Spirit World, which is available on our website, NearDeathExperiencePodcast.org, in the store section. And once again, thank you guys so much for listening.